Meeting of the Betts Subdivision Committee will come to order. Glad that everybody could make it. I believe we have a quorum here. And just want to welcome you to a brand new year, 2011. Looks like we got some brand new people at the desk here, too. So without any further ado, I have the opportunity to have General Joel Kelly come before us this morning. But before we do that, I would like to get to know some of the committee members. And I know I know some of the people over here on to my right-hand side, and they've been here for a few moons. But on my left-hand side, it looks kind of like they're brand new. So I'm going to try and get to know everybody, and hopefully maybe you can get to know them as we introduce ourselves. So we'll start here at the head table, and I'll be the last one, but we'll start to my left here, introduce my legislative assistant, and then go from there and just give us a little bit of background of who you are, what you are. And maybe just for I was looking up some history, see if any of you know some of the state symbols that we have here in this state. And if you can't give us that, maybe you've got some idea of when the state became a territory or when the state became a state. Just some trivia things to kind of lighten the mood here before we get going, and not to belabor anything, but just to introduce us. And maybe if someone could tell me who the first governor was of this state, that'd be great. So I'll start out here with my legislative assistant. Thanks.
Well, good afternoon. My name's Brian Tice. I'm the legislative assistant to the committee. This is my first time doing anything like this, so I'm a rookie legislative assistant, and I'm here to work hard for the committee and everyone, and yeah, so that's me.
I'm John Creasel. I'm a retired staff sergeant. I served 10 years in the Minnesota Army National Guard, so I'm thrilled to be a part of this committee.
I'm Representative Bob Detmer. It's my third term. On certain weekends, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Bob Detmer, soon to retire from the Army Reserve come March. So my family and I are looking forward to that. And I've been on this committee before, from Forest Lake, Minnesota, District 52A. And my wife and I are very proud of our twin sons who are in the military, both West Point graduates. One just got back from Afghanistan last December, and one is heading over to Afghanistan next week. So, great to be here.
Representative Detmer, do you have your coin with you?
Oh. No, I don't. I owe you.
Well, yeah, you do. Just for those who don't know, and I'm sure there's some that have no clue, but in the military we are a coin that we are given. And if you don't have your coin with you, you owe the people at the bar, anyway, a round of drinks. So I'll take a Coke anytime, Bob.
Okay.
I'm just
just
kidding. But anyway, just to let you know, military people, this is kind of a significant thing for veterans, that if you got your coin on you and people are in a situation, a social gathering, and someone puts out their coin, hopefully everybody else puts out their coin, too.
Oh, so. And one symbol, too, of Minnesota is, of course, I graduated from Bemidji State University. So Babe the Blue Ox and the Paul Bunyan statue.
Okay. Oh, great. Great. Thanks for the historical background.
Hello, my name is Mike Lemire, freshman legislator from Little Falls. I represent District 12B, which consists of mostly of Morrison and parts of Crow Wing County. I'm not a veteran, but Camp Ripley is in the heart of my district, and I am honored and pleased to serve on this committee.
Good afternoon. My name is Kathy Lomer, Representative Kathy Lomer. I am from Lake Elmo. I represent District 56A, which is the southern part of Stillwater, northern part of Woodbury, and essentially 10 communities that surround those two cities. My son, Chris, is a captain in the Army. He's part of the 82nd Airborne, and I'm just delighted to be part of this committee. I really appreciate our military.
Tim O'Driscoll, first year legislator from 14A, which was the seat that was occupied by Dan Severson, career military individual. And I like to, one of the first assignments that I'd asked was to be on the Veterans Committee, as I've done a lot of work as a civilian with veterans. Some of the folks that are sitting behind me I've had working associations with, as well as the Minnesota National Guard on various different things. I was very instrumental in pulling together the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon community and Warrior to Citizen program in central Minnesota, where we brought 9 communities together to be the first community in the state of Minnesota as a region to be recognized at the end of last year as a Beyond the Yellow Ribbon region. So I bring some background and some insight into veterans issues to the committee, although a civilian and a non-military background. Mr. Chair, you asked for some symbols. I remember from my 6th grade class where we learned about Minnesota government that our original flags in the state of Minnesota actually had the sun setting on the sun in the wrong spot on the state flag, which created quite a controversy, so we had to go and confiscate all of those old flags and put the sun actually rising in the east and not setting in the west.
Thank you.
My name is Jim Cleary. I'm from House Research and a nonpartisan staffer, so I serve all the members and staff here. I'm a Vietnam veteran and former Marine, and my son is an Iraqi veteran. And I should point out, my wife is really the sergeant major of the outfit, and keeps things together at home. This past summer, we celebrated our 40th wedding anniversary. And it's working out okay so far. And I should mention, when I think of Minnesota, I always think of the great white pine and the red pine.
Hi, I'm Pat LeBaco. I'm the House Republican researcher. 5 years active duty Navy, including 10 months in Afghanistan. And I guess I know the first territorial governor was Alexander Ramsey, and the first state governor was Henry Sibley. So,
very good.
My name is Paul Cummings, and I'll be serving this committee with DFL Research, and I enjoy blueberry muffins, which I think is our state muffin.
You're right.
My name is Tom Ansells. I'm in my third term. I represent Kuching, Itasca, and Lake of the Woods counties, and want you all to come north and enjoy those great Minnesota walleyes.
I'm John Purcell. I represent District 4A, North Central Minnesota, parts of Beltrami, Itasca, Cass counties, and people ask me where that's at. Well, it's the Bemidji area and the Leech Lake Indian Reservation, and I'd just make note in our state symbol, we have Native American and some wild rice, and that's right where I come from. So I'm a active Air Force 40 years ago, life member disabled vet.
Thank you.
State Representative Corey Kath. I represent District 26A, which is the cities of Owatonna and Wasika, on my second term. And by trade, I am a teacher. I've been teaching political science and economics for 11 years at Owatonna High School. And I have to kind of echo the blueberry muffin, the importance of that as I teach how a bill becomes law. We always use the blueberry muffin, but we throw some other things in there. And my high school students cannot to this day believe that we have a state muffin. And so it's a fun activity for them to recognize that there are a lot of symbols that we use. And not all of them would they know about offhand from their days in elementary school.
Representative Kath, do you also teach them about the recipe that to make that blueberry muffin?
Well, yes, because I always throw a couple of wrenches in the gears there, because they have to start out with 4 different bills on it, and they have to try to get to consensus, and I show them how difficult it is up here. I tell them it's kind of like a junior high without lockers, and so by the time we're done, hopefully we can get to an agreement.
Thank you.
I'm Phyllis Kahn. My district is right around in Minneapolis, mainly the University of Minnesota. I was never in the military except my father operated a field hospital in France right after the D-Day involvement, and then spent his when he came back from the military, then spent his time as a doctor in a veterans hospital. So I've had a lot of background in that. I'm also on the board of a very interesting group that maybe we'll learn a little more about in this committee. It's called Starbase Minnesota, and it's a project of the Minnesota National Guard, and it's one of it works on teaching science and technology through air and space issues to students in disadvantaged schools, and it's had some state support, and it's done very well.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Lyle Coonan. I'm in my fifth term, and this would be my third term on this committee, and sure, I'm glad to be here. I represent District 20B out in west central Minnesota, out in the prairie. It's primarily farm country, of course. The counties I represent are Renville County, Chippewa County, and Eastern Yellow Medicine County. For those of you who aren't familiar with the county seats would be Olivia, Granite Falls, and Montevideo, so it's out in that part of the state on the Minnesota River. And it's good to be here, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Greg Davids. I represent Fillmore and Houston Counties, District 31B. I'm starting my 10th term. As far as the state symbol, I represent Lanesboro, the state bed and breakfast capital of Minnesota. And I would just say that I think Phyllis and I are the we're the two original members of the Minnesota Territorial Legislature.
I thought you were going to say, because your one of your predecessors, former State Representative Hoggerud, was a great supplier of such things, you were going to mention the Minnesota symbol most prevalent around Lanesboro, which is the state mushroom, the morel.
Shiitake.
No, no. Morel is the state mushroom.
I like shiitake.
Representative Davids, your bed and breakfast, when did that get submitted as to the legislature for approval?
I think that was 2 years ago, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Chair, I'm Helen Roberts from the Nonpartisan House Fiscal Analysis Department, and I staff this division and also the State Government Finance Committee.
Thanks for being here.
Mr. Chair, I'm Joe Marble. I'm the committee administrator for this committee, and grew up in Hopkins, or I live in Hopkins now, grew up in South Minneapolis. The fun fact for me is my dad remarried when I was 12 to a woman with 9 kids, so we ended up with 14 kids in the family, so it's quite a bunch, and we lost him this past winter. He served in the Korean War on a aircraft carrier, the Corregidor. But so we're very proud of his Navy background, and so I'm proud to be a part of this committee.
Mr. Marble, did you have a military regiment in your family, as far as keeping track of everybody and making sure they all showed up on time?
Mom was in charge. She was good.
Thank you. Well, I'm Representative Bruce Anderson. I represent the northwest corner of Wright County, and I have the cities of Buffalo, Monticello, Clearwater, and Maple Lake as my prime areas of interest. I've been involved with the military, served 4 years in the U.S. Navy from 1970 to 1974, joined the Air Force in 1986, actually the Air National Guard, was with the Air National Guard, the 133rd Aerial Port Squadron out of Fort Snelling from 1986 to 2005, and then joined the U.S. Air Force Reserve, the 27th Aerial Port Squadron, until this past March 10th, when they have rules and regulations that say you hit a certain age, you have to leave. So I was asked to kindly submit my resignation, even though I love the military to the point that I would love to have stayed that much longer. But only those generals, I guess there's going to be a general that's going to talk this morning, they get a little privilege to go beyond that age of the, anyway. But so anyway, that's kind of my background. A little bit of my family. My first wife of 33 years passed away 4 years ago from cancer. And just this past year and a half ago, I remarried to a wonderful woman who happened to grow up in the same town that my mother grew up in, Starbuck, Minnesota. So I'm happily remarried, and we're trying to meld two families together and move from 5 kids to 8 kids. And I have 2 grandchildren who are great, fantastic, and love to see them when I get a chance. And we had a great Christmas and a great New Year's. So Thank you for all being here. I look forward to being with you, meeting with you. Hopefully, if you have any concerns or issues that you're interested in and talking about beforehand, great. Look forward to the bills coming forward to our committee. We are subdivision, and we sit underneath State Government Finance Committee. Chairman Maury Lanning will be in charge of that. And we have one other committee member that isn't here at the present time, Representative Andrew Falk. Oh, he came to... Oh, I'm sorry, he moved in right to my left and didn't even see him, but we should have him introduce himself too. So, Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Andrew Falk from District 20A, the other half of... I share the district with Representative Coonan. I have 4.5 counties, Swift, Big Stone, Lac qui Parle, Western Lafayette, Madison, and Lincoln counties, so if you can envision the South Dakota border, I have over half of that border with Minnesota. We've got a very strong contingency of young people that serve in the National Guard from that part of the state, and we're very proud of the work that they do. So we want to make sure that we support the efforts that they have shown us and anything we can do to make their lives easier. So, pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Welcome to that, and we do have a quorum, as was mentioned earlier. Representative Falk, do you have any type of symbol of Minnesota that you recall would be something that maybe someone doesn't know about? Or?
Well, coming from a farm background, I always have a connection to the land. So I think, you know, and being that agriculture is still our number one economic driver in the state of Minnesota, I have that symbol to fall back upon.
And what symbol in the agriculture area?
Well, just, I mean, looking at the land and the seal of Minnesota, you can see the little bit of the land and realizing that we derive so much of our economy from what farmers produce and whether it's, you know, grain or crops or livestock.
Thank you. Okay. Our committee usually meets till about 2 o'clock, but I don't know if we're going to need all that time, but we will be definitely having that opportunity. And we are going to not be meeting in a week. That'll be Martin Luther King Jr. Day. That day will be off, but the following week, the 24th, we'll be back here again at 10:30 in the morning. So just to put that on your calendars, the next committee meeting will be 2 weeks from today at 10:30 in the basement hearing. 12:30, I'm sorry. What's that? Oh, yes, and on the 24th, the MAG group. I don't know if anybody's aware, or a lot of you have heard of MAG group, Military Action Group. We will be meeting on the 24th in room 300 north, I believe, or south, one of the two. And I believe there's a flyer that is available. One of the gentlemen that's here, Representative Detmar, has a copy of it, and one of our pages, I think, have some of those flyers that can be passed out for those who are interested. A military action group will meet here, meet at the Capitol on the 24th at 10:30. For those who are interested, would like to be in touch with what members from outside the metro area, or inside the metro also, that have interest in and the military affairs issues. So without going any farther, I'd like to bring forward today from the Military Affairs Department, our briefer, Brigadier General Joe Kelly, who's the Assistant Adjutant General of the Minnesota Air National Guard, and he's a Deputy Commissioner of the Military Affairs, and we'd like to have him come forward to give us a brief on his department and bring along his people and introduce ourselves. Okay. And there are handouts from the Military Affairs Office over on the railing over there. So for those who would like a copy of that, feel free to come down and pick them up. Welcome to the committee, and if you'll state your name for the tape, we'd appreciate it, and go ahead.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. As Chair Anderson stated, my name is Brigadier General Joe Kelly. I'm the Assistant Adjutant General for the Minnesota National Guard, in effect the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Military Affairs. With me today also is Colonel Eric Allness, who is our Government Relations Officer for the Minnesota National Guard, and Mr. Terry Palmer, who is the Comptroller for the Department of Military Affairs. So, Mr. Chair and members, we thank you for the opportunity to come today and give you an overview. As the slide on the screen shows, We're going to try to give you a Minnesota National Guard Department of Military Affairs 101. So many of you have experience both in the military and government on this committee or others, but some of you may not, so we want to make sure we establish a base understanding of our department and our operations, and as important as anything, give you the opportunity to ask us questions so that when we leave, you feel well armed with your understanding and knowledge of our operation. The Adjutant General, appointed back on the 1st of November, is Major General Rick Nash. General Nash would be here today, except he had another appointment in Washington, D.C., meeting with Admiral Mullen, who is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff at the Department of Defense, and his counterpart from Croatia. General Nash sends his greetings and looks forward to coming back before your committee in the coming weeks to give the formal agency overview. Next slide, please, Colonel. There's the agenda that we want to talk about today. We'll start first with a brief discussion of what the Minnesota National Guard is, and then maybe a caveat at the end of this of what it is not, because there is often a complex organization that's often misunderstood. But first and foremost, the men and women of the Minnesota National Guard, which is the military component, military force of the Department of Military Affairs. We are first reserve components of the United States Army and the United States Air Force. So we are parts of our country's Army and Air Force, and as such, our mission, we're organized, manned, trained, and equipped to be mobilized onto federal service and then go help fight and win America's wars and conduct other operations other than war around the world. Included in that federal mission set, in addition to the war fighting, are federal emergency response, homeland security, and the like. So we have the ability to respond in the case of emergencies and natural disasters at the orders of the president, in addition to the governor, which I'll talk about in a moment. We are also, though, so that's the first part of the duality of the Department of Military Affairs and National Guard. We are also a state military force, a state militia, if you will, the state defense force in a state status under the control of the governor by constitution until activated for federal service. Our traditional role in that regard is to be a state emergency response force and to provide military support to civil authorities during a disaster and emergency where their local resources, their ability to respond to floods and fires and searches for lost persons and such is overwhelmed. We also have an additional responsibility as the state military force to add value to the communities in which we are located and from which we draw the young men and women who fill our ranks. Representative Kahn gave an excellent example of what we do under that community mission with a program like Starbase, which takes advantage of military resources and capability to help educate young people, as the representative explained, on math and science and technology things. That's an example of that, of the community mission. On the next line, it refers to one standard, two oaths, and three missions. The one standard refers to the fact that everyone that's serving in the Minnesota National Guard, the Army, and the Air Force are recruited, enlisted, trained, promoted, retained under the very same standards of our colleagues on active duty. There's only one standard in the Army and in the Air Force, and we meet it along with our brothers and sisters on active duty and in the Federal Reserve. So there is no distinction between our qualifications and credentials. But the National Guard is unique in that we do swear two oaths upon enlisting or upon being appointed as an officer. First oath is the one that everyone swears, to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. And then we say, so help us God. And then we raise our hand again and swear an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the State of Minnesota. And that makes us unique in the I believe there are 13 military components between all the services. And that makes the two, the Army and the Air National Guard, unique in that we have that second oath of office, that dual status as members of the state military force. And as we've mentioned, we have three missions. Our federal mission, to help fight and win America's wars. Our state mission, to be available as an emergency response force when disaster exceeds the capabilities of the civil authorities to deal with them. And the third one, to add value to the communities in which we live and are stationed and draw our members from. A quick illustration on the one standard. If there are three individuals that join the United States Army on the same day, and one is from the Army Reserve, one is from the Army National Guard, and one is joining the active duty, they will all go through the same process. They will swear their oath of office. The guardsmen will swear the additional oath. They'll all go off to basic training at the same federal installation. They'll all go to their skills training at the same federal installation. And when it comes time to get their first assignment, the guardsman will get on the airplane and come back to Minnesota and go to school, go back to his farm, go back to his business, along with the reservist, and the active duty soldier will go on to his first posting. So there truly is one standard for all members of the United States military. The Minnesota National Guard is not a small organization. As you can see, there are more than 13,500 of us between the two components. Minnesota as a state ranks number 21 in population according to the 2010 census. But as far as National Guards, we rank number 5 or number 6 in the country, is 5th or 6th largest in the country. So we feel good, and you should feel good about the service that our young men and women are providing to our state and nation. The bottom one, where it says Department of Military Affairs, that's just a reminder to emphasize that the Department of Military Affairs is a state agency like the Department of Transportation, but it has a military force, the Minnesota National Guard, embedded in it. So my boss, General Nash, is the adjutant general. He's the commander of the National Guard, but he's also the commissioner of a Department of State Government, the Department of Military Affairs, and we are this combination of state and federal resources, authorities, and responsibilities. Next slide, please. I'm going to quickly go through the two components. As I mentioned, we are part of the Army and the Air Force. The Air Guard component, part of the Air Force, has about 2,300 members. They are split between two units, essentially, one here at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International and the other up at the Duluth Airport. The wing here in Minneapolis is a C-130 transport wing. They haul stuff for the Air Force. They transport people, equipment, and supplies. Chair Anderson was one of the guys that made sure that equipment was properly loaded and accounted for and unloaded. And the wing in Duluth is the 148th Fighter Wing, flies F-16 fighter planes. So it is a more of a combat branch, if you will, of the Air Force. It's designed to, among other things, protect our skies and defeat enemy air forces. You can see the Air Guard is healthy. They are at about 105% of what the Air Force requires them to have. Next slide. The other part of the National Guard is the Army component. You can see we're the larger the component. We're the big brother, if you will, of the two, with more than 11,000 members in the Minnesota Army National Guard. And you can see that we are well beyond what the Army requires us to have at 119%. I have that inventory, that list of units underneath it. I'm not going to talk through them one by one, but I would tell you that the Minnesota Army National Guard has a representative slice, a crosscut of what the Army, the active Army, the total Army has. From a division headquarters, which is commanded by a two-star general, to all of the nearly all of the representative branches, if you will, from combat to combat support, logistics, helicopters, transportation, pretty much a slice of all the units and specialties that the Army has. Minnesota has one of those, as well as a training center up at Camp Ripley, which I'll talk about in a moment, and our own training institute to provide continuing education.
General, if you could just give us an idea of what the patches on the side of the slide represent. I know the Red Bull has got to be the first one, but I'm just wondering what the other three are.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. The one on the top that is the distinctive Red Bull is representative of the 34th Infantry Division, which is one of the most historic divisions in the Army. We've done a pretty good job of branding the Red Bull so that now it's almost become synonymous with the Minnesota National Guard, but it's not the only major organization that we have. About 75 or 80% of our soldiers will wear that Red Bull patch here in Minnesota, and we have a division headquarters and a brigade combat team. So they are a combat division, a fighting unit from the United States Army. The blue patch, that's the Star of the North patch. That is the patch that is directly relates to our state headquarters here. So we talk about symbols of our state, Mr. Chair. We have the Star of the North on our patch. So for the state headquarters here in St. Paul and those separate units that report directly to us, we'll wear that patch. The third one down is a new patch for us. It represents the 347th Regional Support Group, which is a small headquarters that is responsible for commanding and controlling services type units, transportation, logistics, and medical. And they don't have a lot of subordinate units here in Minnesota, but their wartime mission is to go into Iraq or Afghanistan and have those services type units fall underneath them. And the last one is the Minuteman patch, Mr. Chair, and members, is for our regional training institute. That's our schoolhouse. That is our piece of the Army's training and doctrine command. We are Minnesota National Guard. We're not a small business. As you can see, our annual operating budgets now combined total approximately $420 million. We get $400 million, or about 95% of that, from the federal government, from the Department of Defense, Department of the Army, Department of the Air Force. That money goes primarily for the operating of the Minnesota National Guard, paying our soldiers, buying equipment, maintaining equipment, a percentage of the money that it takes to maintain our facilities, a number of other benefits, fuel, all sorts. It's the 95%, the federal part of the budget, really determines how many of us there are, what type of equipment we have, what missions we have, and so forth. So the federal government, the Army, and the Air Force lead who we are and what type of units that we have, what kind of capability we have. The $20 million annual state budget breaks down to, and Mr. Palmer can answer any specific questions, a little more than half of that goes toward a small operating budget for the state agency. I'll talk about employees in a moment, as well as the sustainment, maintenance, and repair of our facilities. The other half of that money goes toward education incentives and budgets. So we like to look at this slide and say 5 cents, 95 cents on the dollar. Minnesota National Guard is a pretty reasonable investment for the state. We do have 2,300 full-time employees, and nearly all of those are either federal employees or federally funded state employees. I think we only have about 30 pure state employees that are funded only with state resources. So about 2,000 of those will be guys dressed like myself and Colonel Allness in uniform. About 270 of them will be people that are security guards and other professionals working in our facilities, maintenance shops, and things like that, that are federally reimbursed, funded state employees, and then 30 of those would be pure state employees. You can see we have 100 units. I'll show you in a map on the next slide. 100 units stationed in 63 communities around Minnesota. Some of the trivia or the facts of our economic impact in certain parts of the state include that we are the largest employer in Morrison County, and the ninth largest employer in the northeast Minnesota in the Duluth area. So we have a significant economic impact on Minnesotans. there's a map that shows our statewide presence. Those are the areas, the communities where we have training centers, air bases, or two Army training sites. Those training centers, think of them as the armories, because that's essentially what they are, the community armories around the state. Some of those are the old-time armories that are nearly, in my hometown of Olivia, out in Renville County, that armory is 90-plus years old and pretty much the standard old-school armory you would think of, all the way to one that we just cut the ribbon on down in Faribault County. That is a joint venture with the Army Reserve, the National Guard, and the community in that part of the state. As I mentioned, we have two air bases. The distinction there is that the air bases are federal property, both in Minneapolis and Duluth. And we have two Army training sites, one up in Camp Ripley, which is a 53,000-acre training site. It is a state-owned military reservation. That is state of Minnesota property. Camp Ripley belongs to the citizens of Minnesota. It's not a federal fort. If you hear a military installation, particularly an Army one, described as a camp or a fort, if it's a camp, it means it's a state-owned military reservation, like Camp Ripley, Minnesota, Camp Shelby, Mississippi. If it's a fort, it is a federal military Army installation. Fort McCoy, Wisconsin, which is an Army Reserve Center, Fort Hood, Texas, which is in the active Army, for example. But we now have a second Army training site, and that is in the Arden Hills, New Brighton area, on the site, part of the site of the old Army, Twin Cities Army Ammunition Plant. We have license to approximately 1,800 acres of land on the non-industrial side of the fence, not the part you see on off of the highway there, where you see all the old production facilities, but the green space that was used primarily for storage and test ranges. And we have a license there to use that property for training our soldiers in a field environment without having to go all the way up to Camp Ripley. And the federal government is making some substantial investments in that site. We're building our largest vehicle maintenance shop will be in Arden Hills, and we will in the next 5 years construct two training centers and armories. Next slide. Speaking of Camp Ripley, and I mentioned that Camp Ripley is a state-owned military reservation. It's the property of the state of Minnesota. We are starting to refer to it more and more as a joint military and interagency training center. Interagency being shorthand or code for our public safety partners and other state agencies. And you can see some images of some of the agencies that we cooperate with up there and do business and have a presence there. The Department of Transportation has their snowplow driver academy there every fall. Everybody that's driving the Department of Transportation snowplow has been trained or recertified at Camp Ripley within a matter of months of the first snowfall. The Minnesota State Patrol has their trooper academy up there, as does the Department of Natural Resources for their enforcement officers. In addition to that, in the right below the word partnership, you see an artist rendering of a building. That is the Emergency Management Training Center that is being funded by the Department of Public Safety through the legislature, of course, to provide a training center for the emergency management disciplines who bring all of the public safety branches, if you will, to bear: police, fire, emergency medical, the National Guard, volunteer organizations, and so forth, when disaster strikes. And that training center, I believe, the ground's been broken, the construction is started, and it should be finished next fall sometime. So Camp Ripley is more than just a place for the Minnesota National Guard and other military forces to train. We see more and more interest on the part of state agencies to come to Camp Ripley to have conferences, to train, to use the facilities. The local law enforcement use our ranges both indoors and outdoors every single week of the year. So it really is an asset. It really is a jewel for the state of Minnesota, not only for the military, but many of our other agency partners. We talk a little bit about how things have changed for us over the years and what we're doing now and maybe what we see going into the future. It's kind of become cliche to say that 9/11 changed everything. It certainly changed everything for those of us in uniform. When I joined the Minnesota National Guard 30 years ago and swore those two oaths, we were known as weekend warriors. And we were seen as the guys who would probably come and help in the late innings of World War III. So we didn't have a lot of equipment. We didn't have a lot of training. We were organized. We did the best with what we had. We were thought of as a strategic reserve. Now, since 9/11, and as our nation fights two wars and does other operations all around the world every day, the simple fact of the matter is that without the Guard and the Reserve, the Armed Forces of the United States aren't big enough to meet all their responsibilities without using us. So we've gone from being part of a distant strategic reserve to being part of an operational force that is being used on a rotating basis. And there truly are no more weekend warriors. All those summertime soldiers, if we had any of them, have long since departed our ranks. The statutory lifetime, when you raise your right hand and swear into the armed forces, is 8 years. So 9/11 happened now, you know, 10 years ago this coming fall. And to me, that means that everybody that's in uniform today has either chosen to join or stay, knowing full well what's going on around the world and what they will be asked to do. And quite frankly, Mr. Chair and members, they're being asked to do a lot, and you should be very proud in the spirit and the manner in which they're meeting those responsibilities. But things have truly changed for us. You see that since 9/11, we have sent more than 20,000 of your fellow Minnesotans, your Minnesota National Guardsmen, your friends, your neighbors, the people you see in church, the people who teach your children, your banker. We've sent those Minnesotans overseas more than 20,000 times. Today we're at a very low level comparatively in those last 9 years. We only have 300, and it's odd to say only 300 of us are overseas today, but we've had more than 3,000 overseas at any given time. And as you know probably from reading the paper or listening to the news, we have 2,800 more preparing. One of those Red Bull organizations, Mr. Chair, the 1st Brigade Combat Team is preparing for mobilization in the springtime, probably toward the end of May, to go back to Kuwait and Iraq and help provide convoy security to, at least at this point in time, to help with the final withdrawal of U.S. forces in significant numbers from Iraq. So we are busy. We are very, very busy. Next slide. You can see in those 20,000 men and women have performed operations not just in Iraq and Afghanistan, but 33 different countries. Many of our soldiers have deployed more than once. Some as many as four or five times, repetitive deployments, depending on their situation and the type of unit that they're in. And the bottom buzzwords there, full spectrum operations, that just means, again, there's only one standard. A soldier is a soldier, a unit's a unit. Minnesota National Guard units, both Army and Air, are being asked to do absolutely everything that their counterparts and colleagues on active duty and then the Federal Reserve are asked to do, from combat operations, kicking indoors, to homeland security, homeland defense, peacekeeping, peace enforcement. The whole menu of things that people in uniform do, your National Guard is capable of doing and has demonstrated that capability here in the last 9 years. Slide. This is a very busy slide. I apologize for that. But this shows on the state mission side, on the domestic operations, the home game, if you will, what we've done. And in the last 26 months, we've performed more than 30,000 days of domestic service, the vast majority of that here in Minnesota, for everything from what's now seems to become our our annual flood fight, which we're preparing for another one, by the way, Mr. Chair and members, to searches for lost people, winter storms, shelters, sheltering, rescuing people off of I-90 down by Laverne, like we did here just a few weeks ago. So it seems like if you laid out, if I stretched this slide back to into the 90s, you'd see that about five or six times a year, the governor issues an executive order declaring an emergency and ordering to active duty and service of the state the men and women and the equipment, facilities, equipment and supplies of the Minnesota National Guard. So it is a very important part of what we do. It's a part that our soldiers and airmen take very seriously. Next slide, please, Harry. Of course, all these new demands, all these things that we're asking these young men and women to do come at a human cost. Time away from work, time away from family, time overseas, wounds, physical, mental, visible, and not so visible. So we've had to adjust a lot of the ways we do business. And we're always given this convenient road to war that's got a timeline. These are all the things that you have to do to get yourself or your unit ready to go to war. But at the beginning of this, back in 2002 and 2003, 2004, there wasn't much of an off-ramp. There was a heck of a nice road, but there was no off-ramp. And here in Minnesota, under the previous Adjutant General, Major General Larry Shelto, and with the help of the legislature and Congress, we developed the reintegration program, which was a formalized program to bring, when we brought our soldiers and airmen home, to help them make the adjustments to their lives, because things change when you're gone, when you're deployed. That was a pilot program, was a Minnesota initiative, and it is now a Department of Defense-wide mandate and is resourced so that we can bring our soldiers and airmen all the way home and get them back on with the rest of their lives. That has resulted in the last bullet there, and this thing that you hear a lot of, if you pay attention to things military, the yellow ribbon or the beyond the yellow ribbon network. And what we are really trying to accomplish there is to create a comprehensive network, funded, unfunded, official, unofficial, business-based, faith-based, education-based network of support for our soldiers, our airmen, and their families to deal with the rigors of deployment and the challenges when they come home. And again, I thank you with all profound gratitude for the support we've received from the state of Minnesota and the legislature. This was the right thing to do by people. It's hard to prove a negative, but I would tell you that we have avoided so many problems by having this network, by having this program, by working with our partners from the Department of Veterans Affairs. We always say we're the number one producer of veterans in Minnesota, and they're the ones that take care of us when we come home. But we are grateful for that. It's the right thing to do, and thank you for your support of reintegration and our Yellow Ribbon Network. Slide, please. So my final thoughts, and then we will certainly entertain any and all questions, Mr. Chair and members. The first one is the statement of the obvious. America is indeed at war. You can call what we're doing anything you want. But America's at war, and your Minnesota National Guard is right in the middle of it. Have been, and quite frankly, we don't see this diminishing very much very soon. I think we will continue to operate at some of the levels that we have for some time to go. Things will never be the same for us. The bell is rung, the genie's out of the bottle. We have now a whole generation of combat veterans and families who have made the commitment, employers that have supported their service members and families. Things will not be the same, certainly in my generation of service. I want to address the third one, because we get asked that question a lot. Man, you're doing all this stuff. You got guys going to Iraq, Afghanistan, Bosnia, Kosovo, Antarctica, Norway. Is there anybody back here to deal with the emergencies and disasters that could happen here in Minnesota? And the answer is yes. And that balance of who's away and who's home is monitored very carefully by the Adjutant General and his staff, as well as by the National Guard Bureau, which is our part, if you will, of the Pentagon. And we will always have, through negotiation and agreement, enough capability back here in Minnesota to deal with the emergencies and disasters. We've got 14,000 soldiers and airmen. We've had maybe as high as 3,000 or 4,000, maybe 4,000 at any one time that were gone. Even at the high point, we had 10,000 people that were available to help civil authorities. So we will be there. It is watched. It is that capability is gauged on a regular basis. You need to know too, and General Shelto, you say it's not bragging if it's the truth. And Minnesota National Guard soldiers and airmen are truly among the best in their respective components. And we have proven that over and over again with demonstrated results on the ground, unit awards, decorations, citations, in competitive type activities. Minnesota soldiers are tremendous. And that's not, of course, reserved to the Minnesota National Guard, but the Federal Reserve and the children of Minnesota, the sons and daughters that go and join the active component. The quality of life we have here, the strong families that we have, great education, really make it, really make our soldiers competitive to be among the best. We are number one in the country for recruiting. We're one of the largest organizations because of the quality of people that we have here in Minnesota. And you should be very proud of that. Our families need your help and your support. We always say they are veterans. They're not victims. But the challenges and some of the hardships associated with military service these days, especially when deployed, it's not unreasonable to ask for some assistance to be provided them. They're probably the last people that would ask for your help, by the way, because they are some of the strongest, most determined and capable citizens that we have in Minnesota. But they do need and deserve your support and your assistance as they try to be that 1% that's out front taking care of the 99% of us that are back here in the United States, back here at home in Minnesota. So again, profoundly grateful for the tremendous support that the Minnesota National Guard and the Department of Military Affairs have been served with over the in this era. I guess now, Mr. Chair and members, humbly ask for any and all questions if we can help you understand what we do.
Thank you, General Kelly, and thank you for the briefing. It's good to know that we have great mission statements there, especially the one about adding value to our communities across from the north to the south, from the east to the west. And it's always humbling to meet young men and women who have sacrificed so greatly and their families along with them. And it's good to see some of the programs that have been put together to help reintegration. I'll open it up. Members, if you have questions, if you'll address your question through the chair, back to the general or his sidekicks there, I appreciate that. And open it up for some thoughts or ideas or questions. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, General, for sharing the information with us. Could you just briefly give us a little information on your family support program that you have? I know as Guard and Reserve, many times we find ourselves at different posts, even within the country. And if you're an active duty person, you have your family right there on the post. And could you talk a little bit about family support for the Guard and Reserve?
General Kelly.
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, Chief. Thank you for the question. You really hit on one of the challenges that we face, in that unlike our brothers and sisters, our colleagues on active duty, we don't have a fort behind a wall that have all these services lined up to take care of our families, because we're spread out over Fort Minnesota, which is as big as the entire state. We don't have a large federal installation here that we can send people to. There is no fort in Minnesota. I think we have, is it 11 family support centers, family readiness centers, strategically placed around the state that are that service center where a not only a National Guard member or his family can go, but any member of any service can go with to seek assistance, have questions answered, get connected. to resources. If you recall the map that had all the stars on it, about half of our units and half of our military population is here in the Twin Cities, and the other half is out in greater Minnesota, which is about exactly how the population of the state lays down as well. And we have to have these family support centers around the state, and they're in places like Camp Ripley, Moorhead, Rochester. They're out in those regional hubs by our subordinate headquarters that are out there. And the point I would like to just emphasize again, Mr. Chair and Representative, is that we are open to all service members and their families. Our soldiers' families tend to benefit from knowing each other. But if you're the 18-year-old wife with a brand new child and your Marine is overseas, and you've come home to Black Duck to live with your mother while your husband is in Afghanistan, it would probably seem like a very lonely place because you're a long way from that Marine Corps base that you came from and where your support system is. So we do try to be decentralized and be out there to provide that support.
Good. Any other questions for General Kelly? Well, very good. I appreciate the briefing, and we'll look forward to General Nash coming to speak to us on a more specific basis, and I thank you for the opportunity to hear from you and look forward to seeing you again. Thank you,
Mr. Chair and members.
Well, members, before we leave here today, we've asked our research, House Research, to give us some particulars, and Mr. Cleary has got some thoughts, some details that he would like to share with the committee. So if Mr. Cleary, if you could give us some background information on...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome.
And just to emphasize that I simply want to pass some information, I'll stay in this chair.
Okay.
Rather than a presentation. Members, there are six things in your pack that I thought might be helpful to you as background information. And if I may, I'd like to just go through them real briefly. And if you find them useful, you will have them for your use later. The first one is Veterans Enactments by the Minnesota Legislature, 2009 and 10. Again, 2009 was a budgeting year, and so I point out to you some of the budget items on that first page. And this you might want to focus on a little bit. Helen Roberts from House Fiscal Information is our real budget expert. So if you have any in-depth questions, she's the person to go to. But the Minnesota Department of, well, this committee will fund both Veterans Affairs and Military Affairs, both departments. The budget for Veterans Affairs is about $58 million a year, round it to say $60 million. Over two-thirds of that is for the veterans' homes. And the remainder is for the department, for the department's veterans programs. It has those two divisions. So the veterans' homes are costly to the state. When I came to work here in this position, we had one veterans' home. I won't tell you when that was, but I remember Representative Kahn was fairly new at that time. and today we have five veterans' homes. So there's an issue there, and one of the policy questions that arises out of that has been discussed somewhat over the past couple of years, and that is whether there's a possibility even of housing some or more of our veterans in private nursing homes. It seems to me the federal laws are pretty conflicting on that basis, and that would be quite a challenge, probably more of a federal challenge than a state. But that the question arises at any point. It's fairly expensive to house veterans in veterans' homes. The Department of Military Affairs budget, as we just saw, is about $20 million a year, and I won't mention that. The second and third pages of that document talk about some recent policy enactments. There have been lots of policy enactments for veterans and also some for the National Guard over the past 10 years. And this touches on some of the more recent ones. We have good summaries, and the department has good summaries as well of specific enactments in any given year, if you'd like to know about that. Or if you ask me about a particular enactment, whether it happened or not, we can go back and find out. Let me move on to the second very brief document, tax benefits for Minnesota service members. It's also in a white page. It's easy to forget from year to year, from session to session, just what has been done. And actually, quite a bit has been done since about since 9/11 in creating benefits, tax benefits for veterans and for military as well. And this summarizes those. Of course, you never are able to pass all of the things we're asked to pass, but quite a lot's been done, and that puts it in perspective. There is a one particular one deserves some description, and that would be the Minnesota Income Tax Credit for Past Military Service. That's just one of several of those enactments. There's continuing debate about whether that addresses the need fully or not, and so you'll be hearing more about that later. Military pay under Minnesota's individual income tax has gotten rather complicated as all of these enactments have been made, and when, quite frankly, we create these summaries as much as for ourselves sometimes as for you, simply because it's too hard to remember the details. So to the extent that we've documented in documents like this, we can pull them up when you ask about them and then have a dialogue. There's another veterans preference in state and local government employment. That has been an issue over the past several years, and a number of things have been done to beef up veterans employment. There used to be very strong veterans preference rather in state and local government employment here in Minnesota. However, in the wake of the Vietnam War, that was essentially repealed, and it's only now being sort of put back together. And then lastly, types of military service for military personnel, or types of service rather. And this is just a reminder of the three general types, and you heard about all of them today: federal active service, federally funded state active service, and then state active service. Just to point out, just to exemplify rather, the difference between the last two. You recall in the wake of 9/11, there was a lot of immediate concern about airport security, and so the president directed National Guard to airports, and they were armed. They were armed with assault rifles and so on, and that lasted for just one day shy of 1 year. I think the reason being that then those soldiers would not be veterans because they hadn't served the full year. They served one day shy of the full year. But they were funded by the federal government, so that was federally funded state active service. A couple of years later, and then they were quietly sent home. They disappeared, for the most part, from the airports. You still see them in a lot of places, in the transit system of New York City and some of the larger airports and so on. But for the most part, at least in Minnesota, those soldiers then, for the most part, went home and went off that federally funded state active service, paid for, obviously, by the feds. I recall a couple of years later there was an incident in which it looked like there might be an airport security concern, and the governor at that time quickly began to order soldiers back to the airport, and then later in the day discovered that that would be state active service because they would be ordered out by the governor, and the state would have had to pay for that service, and so the order was quickly rescinded, and it never made the news, but that's one of the subtleties of the difference in this. Now, when we create bill drafts for people serving, say, tax bill drafts for people serving And we generally tailor them for one type of service or another, or all three types of active military service. That's a subtlety you might want to just keep in mind as you look at those bills. But thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Cleary. Any questions from members for Mr. Cleary? If not, then we'll move on to our fiscal analyst, Ms. Roberts, if you could give us kind of a briefing of...
Mr. Chair, there's a spreadsheet in the packet. I wasn't planning to go over it in great deal detail, but, and I should note to members, this is a draft at the moment. I'm still working on reconciling some of the Department of Veterans Affairs numbers within the budget system. This is a really high-level overview just of the general fund budgets for the two agencies in this division, Department of Military Affairs and Department of Veterans Affairs. And you can see under Department of Military Affairs, as the general had noted, that their major programs are the maintenance and training of facilities and then the enlistment incentives program. There's also a small open general fund appropriation, which is for when the National Guard is ordered to state active duty, which could be for a natural disaster, flooding, or sometimes searching for missing people. And open general fund means the language says there is an amount appropriated to meet as necessary to meet that need. And then under Veterans Affairs, you can again see they have two programs. The first is Veterans Programs and Services, and there's some breakdown of the individual line items underneath the services program. And then their major program is, on the second page, is Veterans Health Care, and this is where the funding for the veterans' homes is provided. And I should note that the Department of Veterans Affairs has been in the Ag and Vets Committee for the last 4 years, which I did not staff. And when it used to be in state government finance, we did not have the veterans' homes. So that's something that is new, will be new to even returning members of state government finance that dealt with these issues before.
Thank you, Ms. Roberts. Any questions for Ms. Roberts? And as we get further into our committee hearings, we'll probably have some further defining of these numbers as we go forward. Before we close for the day, I look forward to working with some people. We have some people that are going to be immensely important to our committee, and they are our pages. And I'd just like to have our pages be recognized, just in Mike Held and Benjamin Roloff. If you could just give us a little bit of a thumbnail sketch of who you are and a little bit of your background. Welcome.
Happy to be back.
Thank you.
That would be Amola. I have done several of the capital with a scoop bill, which I may know. Of you guys. And then I did a high school page in high school, and then now I'm up here to do the plus page.
Welcome. Appreciate you, and we look forward to your helping us and giving us support as we go on. Any questions or any thoughts for the good of the whole here before we leave? Representative Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, I know that from time to time the committee meetings will be attended by some groups that may have business before us, and I think behind me and across the way we have some individuals. Maybe it might be nice for the committee, since there's a lot of new people, maybe get to know some of these people if we've got a few minutes, but perhaps they could introduce themselves to us today as well.
Okay. Can we have people just stand where you're located right now and just kind of give us a thumbnail sketch of who you are?
Retired Enlisted Association, was a chapter president, and a graduate of St. Cloud
to vet, especially I'm a semi-CPA. Thank you. I'm Michael Mercer. All these guys are retired. I had my boots on the ground for 6 years. The veterans have always interested me, and I'm an activist. So you see me wandering around the Capitol. If you got any questions, like I say, I just reach out and grab me. I'll help you whatever way I can.
Hi, I'm Tristan Menes-Castillo. I represent the Women's Veterans Initiative Working Group and the Veterans Advocacy Institute. I am a veteran. I have served in the Navy, the Marines, and the Army for 16 years on active duty.
My name is Richard Leonard. I do veterans and military work for Congress, which I'm on. I'm just kind of here listening in. I'm also an Army veteran. I actually say that I'm serving the San Antonio Medford precinct. So thanks for having me.
I'm Jim Hesselgrave. I'm the state adjutant quartermaster for Veterans of Foreign Wars. I probably have a residency of Veterans Service Corps more longer than anybody else. I've been in the building for 34 years working for Veterans of Foreign Wars. I'm also a Vietnam combat veteran. But the United States Army.
I'm Randy Tesdall, the state adjutant of the Minnesota American Legion, representing the 92,000 members of the American Legion here across the state of Minnesota. I'm a 20-year retiree of active duty service with the United States Marine Corps. I've been retired. I served 6 years with the Department of Employment, Economic Development, and Veterans Employment Specialist, helping veterans get back to work. And now I've already served in the American Legion of the state of Minnesota.
Good afternoon. I'm Mike McKelney. I'm here representing the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. I work in there as their legislative director currently. I've recently retired after 21 years in the Army, most of which was with active duty. The last 7 years was here working in concert with the Army National Guard. I'm here to represent the 381,000 Minnesota veterans.
I'm Linda McDonald with the Minnesota Department of Veterans.
Anybody over here?
Tyler Albert, I'm a legislative assistant for Representative John Wilson.
Hi, I'm Susan Haggerty, and this is my third year as a session writer. Excuse me, session writer for Session Weekly and Session Daily.
Great. Well, thank you for coming. Thank you for being concerned about the veterans' affairs and the issues that pertain to these veterans, men and women that have served valiantly, and are still. We have many people serving today, and probably you have children, grandchildren, people that you know, friends and neighbors, loved ones that are serving our state, our nation in the veterans' area. So, any other further questions or concerns before? Again, the next meeting that we're going to be having will be 2 weeks from today on the 24th of January. It'll be 12:30 here in the basement hearing. And just to remind you of the Military Action Group at 10:30. It'll be in room 300 North here in the State Office Building for those who can attend. So with that, members, I move that we adjourn this meeting. We'll see you in 2 weeks.